All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, December 9th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 46 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. It's actually supposed to be getting quite a bit nicer by the weekend, which I'm really looking forward to. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Transhumanized by 21st Century Medicine and Technology. And we've pretty much established that that is what's happening. We started looking at Google's blood draw vampire smart watch that's coming out to be able to do remote home diagnostics in the safety of your own home. Of course, they think that they're going to be pushing this to aid the poor diabetic patients who are out there who just can't stand the pain of that little tiny needle in the fingertip two or three times a day. Like I said, I mean, it's a pain in the ass. I had to do it for a good 9 months, 8 months, let's say. But I don't think I'd be crying over finger pricks in the end of my finger. Honestly, you couldn't even feel it. But it is a good excuse to get the Google Vampire Watch that's going to be able to suck your blood into the marketplace. Get that online. Make it common so nobody feels alienated or like their privacy is being violated. Make it cool and get it online. We read about some other crazy stuff, though, in the overview of wearables, and they went into all of the other manufacturers who are making similar devices for other bodily functions and liquids, be able to take readings. And one of them, I'm trying to remember, one of them actually talked about, because of the privacy issue, being able to use the water within your body as the transmission medium for data, so that throughout your body, as it's collecting information, it could be sharing information over the water. Like, how insane is that? So they were calling it whole body intranets. So I guess we'll see where this all ends up. But wearable computing sounded to me like it was taking the next steps forward before wearable even got out of the gate. And it's out of the gate, but it's not like it's ubiquitous everywhere. People don't have it all stitched in their clothes yet. But it really has gotten to the point now where they're trying to skip some of that and get right to the tattoos. They had tattoos and stickers, and then they had true implantables that went right under the skin, and everybody was all for it, it seemed to me. That was where they were taking the industry. I don't want an implant, thank you. But it looks like that's how it's going to be. At the very end of the show, though, and I want to go back there, we talked about simulated realities. And we kind of moved through them putting these devices inside of us to tell every detail, to being indistinguishable reality from a simulated reality. And this is something we've been talking about for a long time, as to how they've been able to play the psyop on us, but some of us got smart, but absolutely on the next generations and our children. They've gotten sucked into the machine between the television, the video games, the mobile devices. And, of course, there's always the dopamine dose that comes along with being sucked in. So it's a happy reward system that brings you exactly to where they want you, which is in front of a device where then they can pump whatever information they want to into your needy brain, right? All right, so I want to read this. We only made it through like a paragraph yesterday before we ran out of time. So let's start here. I've had this show put together now since like Saturday. We've been going through them the last few days. All right. Simulated worlds will soon be indistinguishable from reality. Can you say the Matrix? The technological singularity is a hypothetical moment in the future when artificial intelligence becomes indistinguishable from human intelligence and capable of creating smarter iterations of itself. And we mentioned that there was a story that we had read a while ago. So they're saying, oh, the singularity, is a smarter version of itself. But there was a story a while ago, and this looks like it was from August 12th of 2015, because I actually found it. Mother robot builds evolving babies, and they did. As each generation was building the next generation, they were taking all their best traits and integrating them into the newer generation. And that's very frightening if robots are doing that at this level. Apply that same general idea to simulations, and you get the simulation singularity. That is when a simulated world is indistinguishable from reality. This was a theme of a talk this week at London's Digital Shoreditch Festival by engineer Andy Fox, who works for a global simulation software company called Bohemia Interactive Solutions and is director of tech and training company Think. Will there be a world where a simulation may be just as good as the real world? He asked. Or could it even be better than the real world? Yeah, duh, duh, duh. That's the thing. Here we have now this world that they keep pounding fear, 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 fear. They are encouraging cognitive dissonance. Get underneath your bed and put your hands over your head. No, the Russians aren't dropping the bombs, but be afraid, be very afraid. No, the terrorists aren't invading. They're hiding in your closet, mind you, so don't go in there. But under the bed is safe for now. Your world is falling apart. Look, it's global warming. Look, all the animals are dying. Look, there's droughts and natural disasters. I mean, they really are kind of making us want to pull away from this beautiful place we call the Blue Marble Earth. This beautiful place that's been completely destroyed by corporations mining it and sucking every last little ounce off of it for profit and selling the future generations down the river. I mean, that's what they've done. But don't pay attention to that. No. Here, let's give you these brand new Oculus Prime goggles. DARPA Dan's got an application for you. I mean, really, it is coming to that point, and I saw all kinds of integration now with the 3D simulated reality. And there was a story the other day, and I think I had laryngitis, but I did share it all over the place. There is a brand new touchable hologram. How they do it, I don't know, but yes, touchable hologram. All right, let's continue in here. In a sense, I think in some regards it's already happening, says Fox in an interview. If people's minds are already accepting a simulated world as real somehow, then we could perhaps consider that we've already reached the tipping point. And yes, I mean, Grand Theft Auto. I've said it so many times before, but watch that video game. And that's been around since I was, God, I don't know if I was in tech anymore, but I definitely know I was in engineering. That game's been around at least 10 years, probably more. And if you've ever watched that game, rape, steal, pillage, kill, rob, it's horrible. Stab. And that's what we're letting our kids sit and play? That's how we're I can't think of the word. It's early. You know what I'm saying? Oh my God, there's too many lights and it's too early. You know the word I'm thinking of? They desensitize them. That's the word. You know, they're sitting there blasting away with their machine guns or Call of Duty. Training them to be good little soldiers to be sent over to Afghanistan. And I just saw the other day, I don't remember what asshole's in charge now of the military, but whoever he is, there's been so many of them. Honestly, as they keep getting like replaced or stepped down or have affairs. But whatever his name is now, just announced the other day that, oh, yeah, well, women's equal rights. Sure. Guess what? We're going to let women fight on the front lines. And oh, by the way, hey, women will probably be included in the draft, too. And hey, guess what? We have wars going on so many fronts, and we've been letting all of these guys go, cutting back on our troops, bringing the boys home. We might have to call a draft at some point, especially as we get ourselves into more of these sticky situations. But guess what? Girls and boys alike are all well-trained because they've all been playing Call of Duty for the last 10 years. And whatever that name of that game is, the rape, pillage, rob, and stab game. I mean, they just have trained these kids for killing, death. And then they wonder why we have violence. They wonder where these school shootings come from. They wonder why these kids look at the future and go, what the fuck? But don't worry about it, because you know what? We have simulated reality. Simulated reality soon to be indistinguishable from the real. If you remember in The Matrix, reality was quite horrifying as well. They just plugged in and went somewhere else. All right. Anyway, let me see where I was. In his talk, Fox showed examples of driving simulators from a game that was nearly visually indistinct from real life footage. And, you know, excuse me, I've seen some of those with race car footage, especially. They have a lot, like the NASCAR tracks and that. They have them all very well mapped. But we were watching the one night, you know, NASCAR was on. And I like fast cars. I hate to tell you that, but I do. And one night we were sitting around. NASCAR was on and we were looking for some footage. And honestly, I couldn't tell if it was a real landscape or if it was a video game that was a NASCAR video game. They are. And I remember the days when 3D simulation first came out. I don't remember the name of the driver. Maybe it was DirectX, like way, way back. And, you know, you probably were still running a 486. Maybe it was your first Pentium and you had to have a big beefy video card to be able to do it. And it was still choppier than hell. But of course, you made do with it. And you're like, oh, this is so cool. And I mean, take a look at it now. And you got all these specialized video gaming systems, Sony PlayStations and your Xboxes and whatever. And I mean, that's like faster memory and faster processors than we've ever seen before in those gaming systems. So, you know, I mean, we got the power of what we would have considered a supercomputer back just 15 years ago, even sitting in your little video gaming box in the corner on top of your VCR or your DVR now. All right, another example that shows the power of realistic simulators is in the military sphere. Leave it all to DARPA Dion. Pilots learn to fly using simulators, yes, to bomb people in foreign countries that effectively trick the brain into thinking it's actually controlling a plane. And the flight sims, they've been around since the very beginning. That Microsoft Flight Simulator back, oh man, it was probably in the mid to late 90s already. It was pretty impressive back then. And one of the times they were all worried. They were saying, hey, maybe we shouldn't be putting this on the market because terrorists could learn to fly planes with this flight simulator software. But hey, let's leave it out there. Let's make it super, super, super realistic. So anyway, pilots learning to fly use the simulators that effectively trick the brain into thinking it's actually controlling a plane. And in the U.S., a quadriplegic woman was able to, quote-unquote, fly an F-35 jet fighter using nothing but her mind. And we've looked at some of those as well. There's all these mind-controlled input devices. First, it was a mouse and a keyboard, which they are out there. They're pretty expensive, but I'd love to have one of those. It would be kind of cool. And it really is just a little headband that reads some of your waves. I don't know actually how it works, but it's reading some sort of brain waves, translating them into movement. But they also, I saw experiments where they were like doing brain controlling drones. And of course, no, that's not going to work out too well for the people who are on the receiving end of those drones, dropping things on you or even just doing surveillance. This guy, Fox, looks forward to strapping on an Oculus Rift in old age and escaping his weary body. Wah, 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 wah. And isn't that how it's going to be? Let's just pack the old people into some Oculus Rift goggles and go pack them in a back room somewhere. And who knows? And let's like do blood draws and use them for experiments. But they'll never know because they'll be in their alternate reality. It says, but there are photorealistic 4K graphics and easily misled human senses enough to constitute a true simulation singularity. Reality is not just about visuals. It's a whole complex system that so far we've found pretty impossible to model with any great accuracy. But Fox gave the example of the weather, which we're still not great at modeling a few days in advance, never mind 100 years. But in this sense, the chaos of reality still beats our best simulators by a long shot. He also thinks that it may never be possible, but even with improvements that are minor in scope, compared to the idea of a total singularity, like being able to predict weather for a month. Like, what does that have to do anything? I'm not talking about weather, dude. We're talking about singularities and simulations. So perhaps we're not that close. But as far as simply confusing the human senses as to what's real and what's not, Fox reckons that's not far off at all. And I don't think we are that far off. I mean, maybe in person, like stepping into a holodeck, we definitely are not there. Could we be in the future? Well, absolutely we might be. Holodeck, you know, I already saw that they had these 3D projectable holograms. We saw them even use it on CNN back when they were rating Bin Laden's porn, I think. But, you know, where they like beamed Wolf in, boo! I had to laugh. I was like, holy shit, Wolf is a hologram. But they also had, and we had Wolf, and then we had the Holocaust survivor, where they had, I think they'd filmed a guy telling his stories about the Holocaust. And they had projected him into this classroom. But what was so interesting about it is that it had a flavor of artificial intelligence woven in there too, because the children in the room could physically interact with the hologram of this long deceased individual. And he answered questions when they asked them. So I'm not exactly sure how they did that, but that was a video on Pigmine all about holograms. And that was already working. So put in a seatbelt. It's coming. I mean, you know, eventually when they're working on this Get Off of Earth project, I think it's called the 100-Year Earth Ship or something, and it's this large global program they're working on to get off this rock within the next 100 years en masse. You know, once they put them into like cryogenic slumber, or I also saw they'd been experimenting with, what's it called? Cryogenics is freezing, but they don't want to freeze you. They want to just put you to sleep for a long period of time, like a hibernation. I don't remember what it's called, but there was another big video on that. They've been experimenting with traumatic injury, and Gabby Giffords was one of them, where they put them into cold, and it shuts down the processes, so they're really slow, like if you were hibernating. So the blood flow through the brain is really slow. The heart slows way down. The breathing slows way down, and they can literally put you to sleep. But if they could tap in, right, they're doing all this brain research now, and they're able to literally read your dreams and stuff. We've done stories on that. I mean, they and as time goes on, I mean, that's just now some of the stuff that DARPA's come up with. And don't forget, now this has turned into the Global Brain Project. So there are scientists from all over the world working on cracking the secrets of the brain. And once, just like in the Matrix, where they plugged in and they could have like an altered reality injected into their brain. Or, I mean, it's called augmented reality. When you could be playing a video game inside your head with 1,000 other people or 1,000,000 other people, hey, what do you need a planet for anymore? I mean, you could just literally be propped up in a room somewhere with an IV for nutrition and in a simulation. And there have even been scientists who've been studying the Big Bang. You know, they're doing that with CERN and some deep space telescopes and trying to actually go back to the primordial goo to figure out what happened. And there are some scientists that have said, mathematically, we can't quite explain it, but mathematically, the universe, and there have been a bunch of scientists, they've sliced it and diced it a whole bunch of ways. The universe itself very well may be a simulation. So let that sink in for a minute. Are we already in a simulated simulation? All right, let's get off of this. I want to keep going here. Oh, anyway. Says you don't need perfect graphics to induce suspended disbelief in the human brain anyway. Just think about how your mind gets carried away watching a film or reading a book. That's very true. And on some level, you know it's not real, but that doesn't stop you from being emotionally invested. People actually get married in Second Life. As Fox concluded his talk, the human brain is one of the best simulators we've ever had. Things take an inevitable philosophical turn at this juncture if simulations are so realistic, or if we are just so gullible. Then how do we know that we're not already in a simulation? Well, good question. It is a question that's been pondered by everyone from Plato with his cave allegory to the Matrix to philosophers Nick Bostrom with his simulation hypotheses. Hey, I touched on all three of those. There's a link to be drawn here with the broader technological singularity, because if we are living in a simulation, then who or what is behind it? Very, very good question. And even as far as we know, a lot of the digital systems, simulations, rely on some sort of AI to inform it as to what it shows. But on the other hand, artificially intelligent robots often use simulations to train for the real world, which might be handy when it comes to warding off potentially negative consequences along the way to improve AI. If you're going to have artificial intelligence in the real world, he says, maybe it's best to test it in a simulation first. Now, that I would agree with. How about we do some Large Hadron Collider simulations in a video game and let the computer do all the work instead of trying to create the Big Bang here on Earth? And then play around in the primordial goo that it spits out. I mean, what the hell is that? Bigger explosions than have ever been before seen on a planetary body anywhere. Anywhere ever. Even near planet Earth. Should be in deep space, not here. All right, next story. I thought this one was a perfect dovetail to that. So we've been talking about all these new tech startups all over Silicon Valley. Tech titans trying to defy death. Oh, we're all into longevity and medicine, and oh, precision medicine, it's here to save you. Well, there's a new startup. Oh, and remember Cambrian Genomics? That was the crazy lunatic who's now letting people for a dollar create their own life forms, mix and match some DNA, and it'll even help you market it. Well, there's another new startup. A new startup wants to transfer. Yes, this guy must be hanging out for beers with Kurzweil. He wants to transfer your consciousness to an artificial body so you can live forever. He's hanging out with the Russian millionaire, too, their 2045 project, because it's exactly what they wanted to do. Transfer your body, your consciousness, I mean, to an artificial body. Upload to the machine. This is the ultimate in transhumanism. Death is the one thing that's guaranteed in today's uncertain world. Is it really? I don't know. They're doing some really crazy stuff. They could clone you now. Remember, they were talking about cloning Fido the other day. But now, a new startup called Humai, H-U-M-A-I, Humai, thinks it might be able to get rid of that inconvenient problem. Like, how completely and utterly self-centered and I can't think of the word. I'm just spitting out words so it comes. I mean, we have hubris of gods. We think we should live forever. We think we don't deserve to die like the millions have before us or work in the cycle of life. The word's just fine here. No, you know what? We think that death is just inconvenient and we should be able to cure it like a disease. I mean, I don't feel too comfortable with that. I never got to the story, but we might have to get there. I saw now, you know, we saw a few weeks ago that they were going to be testing, you know, all about taking care of the feral cat population because they're so overpopulated. You know, I used to have nightmares about that. Kitties and doggies living with no homes and there being millions of them uncontrolled and starving. It's horrible. I mean, I just, that stuff makes me very upset. But I saw a story the other day pulling on those heartstrings saying, hey, we have a way to fix the feral cat population. Oh, this wonderful new science. It's a DNA vaccine, and we only need one dose. You don't have to trap them and bring them in and get them fixed and then worry about trying to put them back out. Feral cats don't like people. So, and trust me, I don't know. I have a friend who's got a feral cat problem, and it's just about insurmountable now. And they're probably breeding again. Trying to trap them and get them in and get them fixed and then pay for it is close to impossible. So, hey, we got a solution. There's this new DNA permanent sterilization vaccine just for feral cats and maybe in the future for people too. And we saw that like a month ago. I just see something the other day about, hey, you know what? How sad it is that Fido only lives to be like 15 years old. And you know what? People who love your pets, we are working on a new drug that's going to allow Fido to live at least 5 years, maybe even 10 years longer. And we're testing it right now in pets. And there, I don't know, there were a couple hundred people in the study. They're taking their pets to the vet and they're giving them this pill, taking them to the vet, giving them the pill. And Fido's going to live at least 5 years longer from taking whatever these newfangled drugs are. I'm not against living longer or contributing more. But see, I don't think that in the upper echelon where they're coming up with these ideas, and seeing how great it is and step right up to be my guinea pig so we can test it on you before we test it on us. I don't think that that's what they're thinking. They're not thinking to stay here for another 100 years and do good. These people are thinking stay here another 100 years and increase my wealth 10 billion fold. Be in control of everything. I mean, we do not want to be able to give them the ability to make things live forever or to make things live for way extended time periods. You know, we did a story back 6, 8, 10 months, maybe even a year ago now, about the mind prison. Do you remember that? Where they've already been experimenting with this, where they can stretch time. And they were saying what would be so great about being able to stretch time is that they could actually make you believe in your mind, even in just a small fraction of the time, they can make you feel like you've been in prison for a million years. They're like, oh, what a great punishment that would be. Lock you in jail for a million years in your mind. This is very frightening stuff. So anyway, the startup wants to transfer your consciousness now to an artificial body so you could be a robo mommy and live forever. Anyway, this Humai, H-U-M-A-I, thinks it might be able to get rid of that inconvenient problem called death by promising to transfer people's consciousnesses into a new artificial body. It sounds like science fiction, and that's because, whoops, it still is. But none of the technology required for Hume's business plan is currently up and running. And I bet you Kurzweil's working on it. But that is not deterring the company's CEO, Josh Bakangira, who says his team will resurrect their first human within the next 30 years. And that's right about on track. The 2045 project was where they were shooting for merging with the machine. So it's now 2015. At 30 years, guess what? Ding, ding, 2045. If you want to learn about the 2045 project, there's been quite a number of individuals on board. Kurzweil had one of his own ideas. He wanted to literally upload to the machine. And then you had the Russian billionaire who was recommending putting your essence, uploading yourself to a mechanical body or some sort of synthetic body. They are getting close to building synthetic bodies. I mean, and how long will it be before they have clones and whatever? I mean, who knows? And as they now start working with these nanowires and figuring out how to zap the brain here or there or inject things here or there or push this button or that to make it dopamine or serotonin like they're messing with for the super soldiers, you know, eventually, and there's a lot of people working on this stuff. I mean, it's not just some mad scientists in a DARPA lab, right? We've talked about how they sprinkle their money at all these universities and hospitals all over. People are willingly giving up data. People are willingly checking that box to be allowed to be used for scientific research. Eventually, all this money being dumped in, they are going to crack all the secrets of the brain and figure out where the essence lives and how all the parts are electrically and acoustically and chemically working together to make up who you are. So I don't discount this. I just don't think that, I mean, every dystopian science fiction movie just about we've ever seen, there's been some evil that wants to live forever. I just don't think, I mean, you should have a terminal expiration date. That's what children are for. And we've talked about all that. I mean, then there will be no procreation once we all live forever. All right. So how do you go about transferring someone's consciousness into another robot body as Humai explains on their website, which of course comes with complete new age backing music, it says. And it's Humai Tech, HumaiTech.com. Quote, we are using artificial intelligence and nanotechnology to store data of conversational styles, behavioral patterns, thought processes, and information about how your body functions from inside and out. This data will be coded into multiple sensor technologies, which will be built into an artificial body with the brain of a deceased human. And using cloning technology, we will restore the brain as it matures. So it almost sounds to me like they're planning on reconstructing you from all the memories. And, you know, it wouldn't be difficult. We talked about that augmented reality with the implants. And, I mean, there was a TED Talk on that. That isn't going to be too far, far in the future. I'd say within the next 10 years. I mean, we're already attached to our mobile phones. We read the story about the evolution of wearables, and that's exactly what's happening. And they even said it in that story that pretty much our connectivity today is the phone, and it's going to now be absorbed into our clothing and our body. It's not a problem. And the next step beyond that is that one video we watched the one time about augmented reality, where at birth, you're just going to get a little chip in your amglimbata, however you say that, agliambaga, the back of your head, that's going to be with you for the rest of your life. It's going to be a little artificial intelligence chip that will be inside your brain like your digital assistant. It'll help you organize your material. It'll help you keep track of appointments. It will alert you to danger. And it will be recording every second of your life. So you know what? When you die, hey, at that point, it wouldn't be very hard to remove that little chip. Put it into something else. There you go. All your life experience has been recorded. All of your brain mapping. You know, when they take an fMRI, they can see all the circuits popping off in your head as you're experiencing different emotions or watching different things or reading. You know, your brain does different things. And they've been studying that very hard. You know, once they've gotten to the point where that type of activity has been recorded, I'm sure, just like any other biometric, that there probably is a biometric to your brain as well and how it works for you, the individual. So, you know, I'm not saying that this is definitely, that this is science fiction. I mean, it is today, but I don't think it will be forever. So anyway, back to the story. What does that mean in plain speak? Well, it sounds very much like the singularity, again, with our brains being uploaded into computers. But basically, the company wants to cryogenically freeze your brain. I don't know about that, but hey. And then put it back in another body once the technology is ready to hook it up and repair it. And, you know, I don't know, this guy's a little behind the times. Start reading some of the stories we post, because we've already read a few times that they've been growing brains in Petri dishes. So, hey, they can grow a brain in a Petri dish. Why can't they just have a whole new room ready and waiting for, you know, the old guy to kick off, and we can plug this one in? And, you know, eventually too, with all their longevity medicine and playing with their telomeres, and oh my God, I have so many stories that we never got to over the last month, like those crazy worms. They have these worms now that they think can maybe be put into your body and make you live long. Like, it makes me think of Star Trek trills. I don't know, just insane stuff. says, when the technology is fully developed, we'll implant the brain into an artificial body, and the artificial body functions will be controlled with your thoughts by measuring brain waves. And as the brain ages, we'll use nanotechnology to repair and improve cells. And cloning technology is going to help us with this, too. I mean, this guy just looks like he's been reading some posts, and now he's all excited, and he's got a lot of money, and he wants to do something with it. This sounds straightforward enough, and in reality, this is something that scientists around the world have struggled with for decades, but as of yet, there is no evidence that it can actually be achieved. Well, I don't know. I think that we understand probably a little bit more. I really think that eventually they will be able to do this. Just because technology is evolving, it leaps and bounds, and we have self-replicating nanobots and evolving evolution happening in robots. I mean, this stuff is not science fiction anymore, and we have lunatics that just want to sell the farm and make this happen. You know, I told you I subscribed to this transhumanist group on Facebook. And I get stories quite often, and they are just horrifying at like how much these people just eat this shit up. They are so into it, like seriously into it, and they really are just waiting for the day that they can open their arms and completely embrace being part of a machine. It says, okay, sure, we've worked out how to use brain waves to control things like artificial limbs. Yes, we talked about that. Robots, yes. Even other people's arms, yes. And even allow brains to communicate over the internet. We did that too. But getting an isolated brain to think and control a body independently is a whole other story. Not to mention the fact that it is becoming increasingly clear that our brain does not work alone when it comes to regulating our behavior and actions. And yes, this is why all the money's going here. Because feedback from our hormones is crucial to process this information, as it's information from other parts of our bodies, including the bacteria living in our intestines, right? The vagus nerve and the gut bacteria direct connect to the brain. That threw a wrench into their brain project, which is why now they are doing mega research, and DARPA included, into the microbiome. I think I've had enough reading about this guy, because he seems like he's kind of dumb. You know, he's just looking for a way to make a name for himself. So he made a website, and he's going to take money from millionaires to promise them that someday I'm going to hop on the machine. You know, I did see there was a company who is making avatars of people, and it was like a robot from the chest up. And then what they did was they went out to their like social media, and they downloaded all their videos of them talking and all this stuff, and then uploaded it to the scary looking robot thing that was supposed to look like them, so that at their funeral or at any time you felt like talking to them, you could push the button and get all their memories. But that was creepier than all get out. All right. So speaking of Kurzweil, when I was doing the notes for yesterday's show, I was thinking about this, and he's such a creepy guy, man. I've been watching him for so many years, and he still creeps me out. You know, he's a very, very smart guy. I mean, I make fun of him, but he's no dummy. Trust me, this guy is, like, super smart. He even, like, when you go out and you search Kurzweil and you start seeing things for keyboards, yeah, those are his. When you search Kurzweil and you start seeing, like, OCR software, optical character recognition, that, like, scans in things and then puts them into digital. Yep, that's him. He invented that. I mean, Kurzweil has been a futurist for as long as I've been a futurist. And, yeah, he's my nemesis. He's the evil futurist. I tried to be the good futurist. But his thing is he wants to upload himself to the machine, and it always has been. But I was thinking back when he first got hired at Google as the head of Google's engineering, and he was doing language and AI, and we've talked about both of those projects. Pretty much what they were doing in the very beginning was scraping every bit of unformatted text on the internet, in news groups, in chat rooms, in blog posts, and they were trying to take unformatted text and get the machine to be able to not only read it and decode it, but then understand slang, understand colloquialisms, understand definitions of words based upon the context around it, and give machine understanding language a more natural, realistic capability besides just being black and white. And that's what Kurzweil's been tasked with. That's pretty huge. And you can see all the ways that that could help, like surveillance and other things as well. But back from when he first got hired with Google, I remember him saying that they had an unlimited budget. And we already knew, we had Regina Duggan over there, so we already knew that there was like this dotted line to DARPA. But here's the story I found, and it's out of TechCrunch. Imagining the future, Ray Kurzweil has, and these are with quotations, unlimited resources, unquote, for AI and language research at Google. Last month, and so this was January 2013, so it must have been December of 2012. Oh, what a great month and year, right? That was the December 21st, 2012. I think that's what it was. Yeah, I don't remember when it was, but it was December of 2012. Last month, famed inventor, entrepreneur, and futurist Ray Kurzweil announced that he was joining Google as director of engineering. And in an email to TechCrunch, Kurzweil said at the time that he would be assuming a full-time position in Mountain View, California, focusing on, quote, new technology development, unquote, as well as machine learning and language processing. Joining other giants of technology at Google, like the VP, chief internet evangelist, and father of the internet, Vint Cerf. Well, I didn't know Vint Cerf was there. The move was not necessarily an unexpected one, especially as Google's co-founder, Larry Page, who just launched the first reusable and landable rocket into space and brought it back down, and Sergey Brin, yes, whose wife is the CEO of 23andMe, have long been fascinated by the singularity. Oh, no, they all are. The theoretical moment in time in which artificial intelligence surpasses the human brain. Beyond being credited as the inventor of the flatbed scanner and the first print-to-speech reading machine and various other speech recognition technologies and text-to-speech synthesizers, Kurzweil is one of the better-known proponents of the technological singularity and helped to popularize the concept. Nonetheless, many have wondered what Kurzweil's new position would mean for Google and the billions of people in its global reach directly. And would they be uploading Kurzweil's brain into their data centers? Well, that's the first thing I thought. Will it become the next Skynet? That's the second thing I thought. Fulfilling technological prophecies. Yes. I mean, I remember the day I saw this news, like the whole room literally started moving. I had to hold on to something. I was like, oh my God. And this is the one thing that you did not want to happen, was the lunatic crazy talking about turning us all into cyborgs and uploading to the machine. I mean, you ever see Tron? I saw Tron. And then he becomes the direct. I mean, I really thought he was too eccentric for any large corporation, especially someone like Google, to bring on board and like actually pay him a salary and expect him to produce. He'd be one of those guys who could sit around ad nauseum and bloviate all day. But is there any real work being done? And I guess there is, because they brought him on board and they gave him the keys and gave him an unlimited budget. Speaking at an event at his Singularity University, well, Kurzweil's, ex-prize chairman Peter Diamandis, and we read about him as well. I don't remember what he did. Peter Diamandis DiamanDis. He just came up the other day, too, in something. Peter Diamandis and Kurzweil shared in a dialogue that sheds a bit more light on just what Kurzweil Google will mean. Thanks to a post by my friend, we learned that the futurist will be working on advanced implementations of AI at Google, where he will apparently have unlimited resources. And while it might seem odd that an independent thinker like Kurzweil would join a large corporation, ding, 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 it's exactly what I thought, and that's why I was so afraid. Because that's not a good thing. I mean, they're bringing him on for a very good reason, I'm sure. Given Google's reach and their enormous computing resources and their talent pool, and they have a lot of the biggest brain researchers, too, by the way, working at Google now, that they've pulled out of universities. And along with the presumed freedom to investigate whether or not androids actually do dream of electric sheep. And yes, he does. There is plenty of incentive to take this kind of work to Mountain View and participating directly in innovation, arguably at one of the forefronts, likely has to be a bit more appealing than writing books and speaking, which is what he was doing before. After all, who needs to know how to read when robots can do that for you? Yes, and feed you grapes. And it is likely the same impetus, which I don't know who these guys are either. We should look them up. That drew Sebastian Thrun and Peter Norvig to Google as well. In a conversation with Diamandis, Kurzweil says that he envisions his role at Google to be one in which he helps to create technology that truly understands human language and its real meaning. And thanks to its many far-reaching tentacles, Google already has an enormous amount of information about human speech, thought, and beyond. Knows where we are, what we're interested in, who our friends are, what we're saying in our emails. And if Google were actually able to understand us, the user, we would be in trouble. And in part, this is a frightening concept. Well, it sure is. I mean, do you understand how much Google knows? And now they're giving it an intelligence to understand. Oh, they're going to be picking out insurgents left and right once this puppy gets up and running. It's easy for companies to become wrapped up in defending their marketing positions and stock prices. But at least against their presumed better innovation-centric selves. But while Kurzweil's mission may be an appealing one, the question is whether Google will be able to maintain its don't be evil mantra in the face of innovation, exponential technological growth, and knowing anything that happens anywhere in minutes with the singularity. And guys, it's what I've been saying all along. And Google's tagline really was, we are not evil. I don't see that anymore. Do you see that? Like, usually when you have a tagline, it's in little brackets or something, and it's like right next to your logo. I don't see that at all. Or like right under the logo, Google, we are not evil. I don't see that anymore. All right, we got about 2.5 minutes left. I'm going to jump out of that story. So, you know, you guys might laugh at me because I go off on Kurzweil a lot, but the guy is frightening. And like they just gave him, he's a mad scientist. He always has been, but he was in a corner and people kind of point and laugh and go, look at how weird that guy is doing his own thing. You know, and yeah, he's the father of like OCR and Texas Beach and all this other stuff. But, you know, whatever. But they literally have given him like the big scary machines now and the Frankenstein lab to do what he's got to do. All right, this is a story from a few weeks ago. We never got to it, but I thought it was pretty important. Engineers are now teaching robots to say no. Do we really want robots saying no? Yes, they're teaching robots to say no, but don't worry about it because it's all for your own good. And we sure hope so. That's what the story says. At first, the news that software engineers are teaching robots to disobey their human masters does sound slightly troubling, you think. Should we really allow artificial intelligence systems of the future to say no to us? I'm going to say no to that. But hey, once you think it through, you can see why it might be a good idea and end up saving your life one day in the future. Well, I don't know about that. I just, these people, they are not, where's the ethics? I mean, there is not any long-term thought going into things. They need to have like 20 different levels of kill switches on these suckers and some sort of like weapon so we can just kill them instantly. Kill all robots. That's what I say. Mark my words. Someday when they're hunting you through the forest, you'll be like, Joe was right. Consider a robot working on a car production line. Most of the time, it would simply follow instructions that it's been given. But if a human should get in harm's way, well, we've seen that happen already a couple times, people killed by robots on an assembly line over the last year. The machine itself needs to be clever enough to stop what it is doing. It needs to know how to override its default programming to put the human at less risk. And it's this kind of functionality that a team from the Human-Robot Interaction Lab at Tufts University is trying to introduce. This team's work is based around the same quote-unquote felicity conditions that our human brains apply whenever we are asked to do something. Under these conditions, we subconsciously run through a number of considerations before we perform an action. And I know how we do this physically. Can I physically do this? And can I do it right now? Am I obligated based on my social role to do this? And finally, does it violate any normative principle to do it? And if robots can be conditioned to ask the same questions, then they will be able to adapt to unexpected circumstances as they occur. And you know, yeah, it's all about keeping the human safe, but how about adapting to the unexpected circumstance where I come up behind you and I'm gonna flip off your little robot-y switch? You might not like that, and I might end up with a broken hand. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Wednesday. Lonnie Clark is up next, and then we have Josh live at 6 p.m. Eastern.